on Space Coast Daily Sports Talk with a good friend of mine. We were just joking around that, well, we have a lot of common interest, horse racing, our Washington Capitals. It is only this time of the year we generally chat. That is because Mr. Michael Dempsey is the editor-in-chief for Turf and Sport, and he handles the horse racing for Odds Shark. He is Michael Dempsey. Welcome to Space Coast Daily Sports Talk. How are you?
I'm doing great. As long as we don't talk about the Capitals, I'll be fine.
I can promise you two things are going to happen in this interview, Michael. The first thing is we are not going to talk about the Washington Capitals, and the second thing is we aren't going to talk about the Washington Capitals.
That sounds perfect, man. It sounds perfect.
Oh, man, I just scratched my head. But anyway, let me get off of that, because I will. Look, a couple of years ago, you correctly remember I was over at WMEL, and we're doing a radio interview in April, and I said, we got any contenders this year? And I'll be damned if you didn't pop up with American Pharoah. I said, that was the horse to watch. It goes on to win the Triple Crown. You and I talked briefly after that about, you know, was it or wasn't it good for horse racing? Let me ask, get your thoughts now here, 2 years later. Did it help it or did it actually hurt it?
I think it helped it a little bit. I mean, in general, horse players, you know, drive the game as far as the handle goes, you know, it probably didn't have a major effect on betting handle. I think it had a little bit of an effect on the mainstream media who covered horse racing pretty well. I mean, but I think it's died off a little bit. I mean, you know, I used to contribute quite a bit over Bleacher Report, and their horse racing section was kind of robust there for a while, but that's kind of lightened up a little bit. The mainstream media, you know, horse racing is kind of become kind of a niche sport, and it's, you know, it's helped a little, but, you know, overall, I don't think it really has. I mean, there certainly will be a 3 or 4 week, you know, crazy buzz if whoever wins the Derby on Saturday turns around and wins the Preakness. So we'll have a, you know, short-term thing, but it, you know, when you have these horses that kind of retire afterwards, you know, there's not a lot of momentum that continues throughout the rest of the year after the Triple Crown.
You know, they do call it the sport of kings, right? Not everybody's a king, so there you have it. I mean, that's just the way it goes. I, for one, was just glad that I got to see another Triple Crown winner in my lifetime, Michael.
I'll tell you, it was an exciting time. I mean, the 3 weeks building up to the Triple Crown, because everyone thought he was going to win the Triple Crown. I mean, I've never worked so hard in my entire life. I mean, I got so many phone calls from so many different people. Different publications and radio shows and TV shows and everything. It was really kind of a crazy 3 weeks. And I tell you what, it was an exciting day. It was an exciting race. You know, and I think it'll be the same thing. I mean, I think if we have another Triple Crown winner over the next couple of years, I think the excitement will be relatively close to what it was, even though, you know, American Pharoah was the first one, you know, close to four decades. But it's a pretty unique thing, and you know, I'd like to see another one over the next few years, hopefully.
Yeah, I would, too. We're talking to Michael Dempsey, editor-in-chief at Turf and Sport. Check it out online at turfandsport.com, and also handles the head horse racing guy for Odds Shark. All right, well, let's as you looked at this field coming in, before we even talk about the 20-horse field for the Kentucky Derby tomorrow. In April, where were you in April? Where were you leaning at in April, Michael?
In April, I was sticking my head out the window and screaming because I had basically no idea who was going to win the Kentucky Derby. I mean, generally, the horse I like going into the Derby every year is a horse that has pretty smooth sailing. Like, everything kind of goes right. They have a good two-year-old campaign. They come out, they run well in their prep races. Maybe not necessarily win, but they run well. They don't have any hiccups along the way, no missed training, no nothing. And this year it's been kind of crazy because, you know, Classic Empire was the early Kentucky Derby favorite. You know, he kind of stubbed his toe, you know, when he came back on the Holy Bull. He ran third, and he came out of that race with a foot abscess, sore back. You know, he wasn't working out great, and he literally drifted up to, I think, close to 12-1 in the future betting after being down as low as 5-2. Then he comes back, he runs really big in the Arkansas Derby in his last start, so now he's the morning line favorite. And another horse that I like, McCracken, was kind of the same thing. You know, I really have liked this horse all spring long, but after Sam F. Davis win, you know, he became one of the leading Kentucky Derby contenders. And then all of a sudden he's got an ankle issue. He's got a sore ankle, and he missed the Tampa Bay Derby, which was going to be his next start. He made his final start in the Bluegrass, you know, where he finished third. So those are two major contenders that, you know, have had hiccups along the way. Gurman's another one. He's got a quarter crack. So there's been a lot of, like, this little chaos thing going along the Derby trail this year. And it's a wide-open race. There's no real heavy favorite, which should make for an interesting and challenging race to wager on tomorrow.
Yeah, you look at these horses. McCracken starting at the 15 pole. What? Tell us about pole position, or pole position. This is not NASCAR, Alan. Tell us about the draw here. Tell us about the draw here. Who got a good draw here? Who didn't?
Well, it was pretty fair all around. I mean, where you basically don't want to be in a 20 horse field, the Derby is the one or two post, or maybe the 19 or 20 post. I mean, six out of the last nine Derby winners broke from the 13 post outward, which is a little bit different than in your daily racing at Belmont or whatever, when a horse draws the 12 or pretty quick run to the first turn, they basically have no shot. But there's a pretty long run to the first turn at Churchill Downs, so the outside posts are generally a little bit better because you can also stay out of trouble. When you're down along two or three or four posts, you know, there's a cavalry charge to that first turn. You can really find yourself in a lot of trouble. So the outside posts are just fine.
Who is the horse here to throw in? Well, I'll just ask it. Who's a long shot in this field you like?
And there's a couple. I mean, the one horse I kind of like is Hence, who won the Sunland Derby, and, you know, not too many Derby winners come out of New Mexico, but, you know, Mind That Bird did, and he won, of course, at 50-1. And then Firing Line, who ran the Sunland Derby back in 2015, he came back and ran second in the Kentucky Derby. He ran really well. So Hence is coming out of that Sunland Derby. You know, he didn't fire in the Southwest. He finished seventh. And he comes back in the Sunland Derby, and he really ran really big. He ran a 97 buyer speed figure, which really stacks up really well with, you know, the major contenders. And the horses he beat that day have, you know, run pretty well. The runner-up was Conquest Mo Money, who came back to run second in the Arkansas Derby. Third-place finisher Hedge Fund just missed winning the Illinois Derby by a head in his next start. And then the fourth-place finisher in the Sunland Derby was IRAP, who came back to win the Bluegrass. So the Sunland Derby form is looking pretty good. So, and he's kind of a late-running colt, and I think he's going to pick up a piece. He's got Drew in the irons. He's 15-1 in the morning line. He's probably going to go off 15-20-1. I think he's got a pretty good shot, and I think Practical Joke's got a pretty good shot too. Now, I don't like his post, his 19th post, but he's making small strides. Every race he gets just a tee a bit better, and I think, you know, there's been some question marks about whether he can get a mile and a quarter, but, you know, he's trained by Chad Brown, who's the Eclipse Award-winning trainer last year, who has never won the Derby. I think his best finish was with Normandy Invasion, who ran fourth a few years ago. I think he's got a shot. And I think Jay Boy's Echo getting overlooked in the betting as well. He's going to be a big price, I think. He's breaking from the 13 post. Didn't fire his best in the Bluegrass, but he ran really well winning the Gotham. Ran a 102 buyer speed figure. And there hasn't been a whole lot of triple-digit buyer speed figures by these Derby contenders this year. So I think, you know, any of those three could easily land in the trifecta or the superfecta.
California bred horses have really a storyline throughout the prep season. Talking to Michael Dempsey of Turf and Sport, editor-in-chief, and handles all of the horse information over at Odd Shark as well. The California horses, because, I mean, honestly, look, American Pharoah, you look at some of the recent Kentucky Derby winners, California bred horses. You go back to the Derby prep with Mastery, and then that unfortunate incident there really left the field void of a California bred that has a shot to win this thing.
Yeah, really. I mean, the Santa Anita Derby this year, I mean, Gormley won the Santa Anita Derby, and normally the horse that wins the Santa Anita Derby is going to be one of your favorites. But, you know, the time was slow. The buyer speed figure was an 88. You know, Battle of Midway ran second. Royal Mo ran third. He's probably not even going to get in the race. And, I mean, I kind of respect John Sheriffs, of course. You know, he won with Giacomo, and he trained Zenyatta. But he just doesn't seem fast enough. And really, except for Mastery, who who won that earlier race in California. These horses coming out of California just really don't look that all that appealing to me.
Yeah, no, me either. Tell me about, and I'm being selfish here because you know me from Maryland, love the Maryland bred horses always. Of course, you know, Kent Desormo, who got his start at Pimlico and Maryland Trek. Tell me about Irish War Cry and if he has any shot to at least factor into a triple or exacta for me.
Yeah, I mean, he's my second choice. I mean, he's the only horse in the Derby field that's run two triple-digit buyer speed figures this year. The question with Irish War Cry is what happened in that Fountain Youth. He won the Holy Bull, just gate to wire, and then he came back in the Fountain Youth, and he really tossed him in dud. He finished seventh, was beaten, you know, more than 20 lengths. And then he comes back and he wins the Wood Memorial, which has not been a really good Derby prep over the past, you know, two decades, but going back further in time, it has been. And it was actually was downgraded to a grade two this year. But I really liked his Wood Memorial. He didn't beat a really tough field, but I thought he looked really good doing it. And I really like Grand Motion. Of course, he saddled Animal Kingdom, who won the Kentucky Derby back in 2011 as my top pick, and he paid like $43. So I love Grand Motion. I'm a Maryland bred, and when I owned horses back in the day, many, many moons ago, of course, very cheap horses, my box was right next to Grand Motions. He was an up-and-coming trainer at that time. And you know, I've always respected Graham, and I just think he's one of the best trainers in the country. He's an honest trainer. You know, he never has any drug positives or any kind of issues at all. He's just a class act. So he's my second choice in the race. Also, if the track comes up wet, you know, that I think that moves him forward as well. So that's where my rooting interest lies as well, as with Irish War Cry, because Grand Motion is the best. And also his jockey, Rajiv Marah, I mean, he's lucky to be even riding again. He suffered a terrible spill about a year and a half ago. A horse landed on him. He broke four vertebrae. It didn't look like he was going to make it back to the races at all. And he came back to start off a little bit slow. He's been riding really well in New York over the past couple of months. And I think that would be a great story to see Marah win his first Derby as well.
Talking to Michael Dempsey, editor-in-chief of Turf and Sport, and handles all the horse racing information over at Odds Sharks. We're also Mutual Capitals fans, which we said at the beginning of the interview that we would not discuss here on Space Coast Daily Sports Talk. The one thing I really like about NBC's coverage of the Kentucky Derby is, look, I get it. You know, I know that you get a lot of first-time listeners. I'm covering an event tomorrow called the Bourbon Ball, and it's by a local social club of women that are getting together and dressing up for Derby Day, and they bring in their husbands, but they know nothing about horse racing, and that's okay. And the thing that I like about NBC's coverage, Mike, is the fact that, you know what, they don't – look, I get it. At this time of the year, you got a lot of new horse watchers, but they also cater to guys like us that follow the sport year-round. But for those that will be tuning in for the first time, they're going to hear terms tomorrow that they're unfamiliar with, like buyer speed. Tell everybody what that is. Tell them what a couple of these terms are and what they mean.
Well, you may hear the buyer speed figure tossed around by the analysts. Basically, you know, every race is timed, but the tracks vary so much that Andy Byer, who was a longtime columnist for the Washington Post, developed these buyer speed figures. And basically that number relates to how fast or slow the track played that day. So you can compare a horse from California to a horse from New York, a horse in Florida that all race on different tracks. You know, some days the track plays very fast. If it's maybe dry out, you know, maybe a day where it's colder or rainy, the track plays much slower, much deeper. These numbers kind of compute, and that way you can kind of compare the numbers instead of actually looking at the times. I mean, I barely look at the times anymore. I basically look at fire speed figures or pace figures or things like that. And the other thing they're going to talk about mostly is post positions and the odds. I mean, and as far as a season better goes, they want value when it comes to, you know, betting the winner. I mean, it's not a whole lot of fun betting a favorite or 9-5 shot in a 20-horse field. You know, that horse may not offer a ton of value. So, you know, it's not just picking the winners as far as, you know, being a successful horse player. It's you know, winning money and looking for value when you do the betting.
You look at this race tomorrow. Again, we're talking to Michael Dempsey from turfandsport.com. You look at this race tomorrow with a wet track or without a wet track. There does seem to be exactly some of that. There seems to be a lot of value, at least when you look at the odds. I don't know what they'll look like tomorrow. I wouldn't suppose it would fluctuate too much. But there's a pretty decent opportunity to make some money here tomorrow, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, the favorite has won the Derby for the last 4 years, and that just rarely if ever happens. I think this year, I mean, I think either Classic Empire or actually right now, Always Dreaming is getting a little bit more action in the betting. Those two are going to be your betting favorites. But you've got another five or six or seven horses that would not be a shock at all if they won the race. Kraken, hence Gunavera, Gurman, Gormley, the San Anita Derby winner. It's really a wide open race. So no matter, even if the favorites do win, it's still going to, you know, the exactas and the trifectas are still going to pay, you know, pretty well. And I just don't think, you know, we're going to see a favorite win 5 years in a row. That would be mathematically, just with 20 horse fields, it's just not going to happen at all.
Well, I'm going to divulge my pick now. My pick's going to be Irish War Cry. I'm going to pick and win this race tomorrow. I love the fact that the sire is curling. I just absolutely love that. And I think for me, anyway, with the last name of Slaughter Zinski, you look at the dams here, Irish Sovereign and by Polish numbers. Now, you can't go better than that. I'm a Polish guy with a Maryland bred. He's a little bit of Polish in the horse's blood. And because, Michael, people do this, don't they? Colors, numbers, you know what I mean?
Sure, they do.
People pick it the craziest way, right? What's the craziest
exactly.
way? What's the craziest pick you've ever made and won a little bit of money on?
Well, I tell you, my ex used to wager on the horse that went to the bathroom before the race. That's how she picked it. And she picked a 30-1 shot one time where I was on the Laurel Park grandstand and decided to book her bet instead of run inside and place the bet. So that ended up costing me a couple $100. But, I mean, I have a Kentucky – normally I spend my day in the office on Kentucky Derby Day. Tomorrow, my girlfriend, who's a musician, the bar that they – have decided to have a Kentucky Derby party and had me come there and throw out my expert picks or whatever. But chances are most of the people at this party are probably better off picking a name or a favorite number or whatever than possibly listening to my selections, because if I'm wrong, then everybody in the room is going to be wrong. So I'm going to hope they all just kind of make their own picks. And I'm just going to sit at the bar, listen to my girlfriend sing, and we'll watch the race that way. I'm going to try to stay hidden, but I have a feeling that may not happen tomorrow. But we'll see how it goes.
I've been asking throughout the course of the week and all the various interviews that I do, this week through last night, I had an opportunity to attend an FSU event. And I asked Jimbo Fisher and Gene Deckerhoff for their picks in the race. And Gene Deckerhoff took Irish War Cry as well, and took Irish War Cry because the Silks are the closest thing to Garnet and Gold, if they're not Garnet and Gold, in the race. So, you know, there you have it.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it works. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the people that – wagered on Giacomo or Mind That Bird, you know, like the name or like the colors of the silks or like that particular number.
Yeah.
And they walked out of a Kentucky Derby party or the racetrack that day with a really memorable story because they hit a 50-1 shot. So, you know, I mean, you know, stuff like that happens. I mean, yeah, I can pick a Animal Kingdom or a Super Saver or American Pharoah to win, but, you know, some years I don't pick the winner. So, you know, so it taking somebody new to the racetrack, I don't insist that they use my picks. I'm like, you know, if you see a color of a horse you like or a number or jockey or name or whatever, you go to the window and you bet it. And most of the time they're probably going to walk out of the track with a few more bucks than they came in with.
Perfect segue in the final question here for Michael Dempsey from Turf and Sport, and handles the horse racing information for Odds Shark. Give me the winner tomorrow.
I'm gonna go with McCracken. I just think he won his first four races. Three of those came at Churchill Downs, including the Kentucky Jockey Club last fall. And he won the Sam F. Davis, came out of there with a little ankle injury, came back and ran third in the Bluegrass, but I don't think he was fully cranked. His trainer, Ian Wilkes, was a former assistant trainer to Carl Nasser, who won the Kentucky Derby twice with Unbridled and with Street Sense. And both of those horses lost their final prep in the Bluegrass and came back and won the Kentucky Derby. And I think Ian Wilkes is kind of using the same strategy. I don't think he was 100% cranked up. He's been working gangbusters this week. He's been working really, really sharply. I think he's going to win. Irish War Cry is my second choice. I think we're both on that same bandwagon. And then Hence is my third choice. Hence and then Classic Empire, who makes me nervous because I think he's coming in the race really well. His trainer is very confident. But I think when you're looking at Classic Empire at 4-1 or 9-2, you know, I'd rather get a little bit more value. And hopefully I get that with McCracken and Irish War Cry. I think they're both going to be 6 or 7 or 8-1, right in that neck of the woods.
And then on a personal note here, we're talking about Maryland bred, Maryland tracks and trainers and stuff like that. Whatever became of King T. Leatherberry?
He's still training. In fact, you know, he finally made it into the Hall of Fame. You know, he's got that grass horse that just keeps winning and winning and winning. He's like 12 years old. And I don't think he's ever going to retire. I think he's like 82, I think, right now, 82 years old. And he's still, you know, he's not at the track every day. You know, he works out of his office sometimes. But, you know, he's keeps on ticking and he keeps racking up winners. I mean, I think he's second maybe in all-time wins behind the guy from West Virginia, Baird. I think King Key might be second or third in total wins. And he's still cranking them out. And he's actually winning at a decent percentage. I think I don't follow Maryland racing as well as I used to when I lived in Maryland. But I think he's winning at a decent percentage too. So he's still cranking out winners.
What have you heard real quick here on slot machines and how it's helped Maryland racing, if at all?
Well, you know, it infuses the purses, and really horse racing kind of needs that right now because, you know, handle has dropped off quite a bit. Unfortunately, some tracks are kind of using the slot money as a crutch and not really taking care of the horse racing side of things because they know they've got money coming in from the slots. So it's kind of a catch-22. There's some jurisdictions that, you know, they pay all their attention to the slot machines because there's money coming in from that. And they don't have to go to all the expenses of running racing all the time. So, and eventually, you know, a lot of these governments may stop, you know, cut off some of that slot welfare that's going to the horse racing. So, you know, but, you know, tracks like Saratoga and Keeneland and Del Mar and, you know, they have to run these boutique meets, and they do really, really well. But the day-to-day tracks that run all the time, you know, eventually that slot welfare might cut off. But Maryland has definitely made a resurgence. I mean, it was not doing really well there for a few years, but slot money has definitely helped. And I think the purses are raised, the field sizes have gone up, the breeding program is doing pretty well. And I think they're planning on doing some remodeling over at Laurel Park. Eventually, there's talk about maybe moving the Preakness to Laurel Park or possibly getting the Breeders' Cup to Laurel Park. So that would definitely be a big shot going for Maryland racing.
No question about it. He is Michael Dempsey of TurfandSport.com, editor-in-chief, and handles horse racing information for Oddshark. Michael, thanks so much. No doubt. The busiest time of your year, and you know, I'm going to throw it out here. We'll talk to you again here in a couple of weeks as we get set to break down whether or not the Run for the Roses champion has a shot to win the middle leg of it, the Preakness Stakes. Michael, thank you so much.
All right, you guys have a great day and good luck tomorrow.
Thanks, you too.